Buenos dias, New York City. Welcome to City Watch on WBAI, here to start your day with the news and insight about New York and the world around us. I'm your host, Carlos Menchaca. Each week, my co-host, Jeff Simmons, and I strive to bring you perspectives from those who shape New York City, the elected officials, policymakers, but also the experts and influencers and everyday people that keep the city moving forward. Jeff, how are you doing? Buenos dias.
Buenos dias. Good morning. I've already had my first cup of coffee, so I'm ready to go.
Wonderful. And I'm holding mine close to me as well.
Lots going on today, in fact. Up early reading the papers before you head out the door today, just letting folks know it will be a bit cloudy here in the city and a little colder than expected, but inching up into the 40s. But this at least will give us a few good days this week before the rain sets in. I think it's starting on Thursday. And by the way, if you are traveling around the city today, you should definitely check out any sites that will provide you with directions, because there's going to be a number of road closures given a half marathon that's taken place in Brooklyn, Lower Manhattan, and up through Central Park. So just be prepared for that. Carlos, have you been following anything in the news this morning? Anything you want to talk about? Because, of course, I've got my pet interest that I'll bring up in a moment.
No, go ahead. Go first, and I'll come in. I do have to say, though, the half marathon is something that I've done before. It was the Brooklyn half marathon, and so when I heard the news about the Manhattan, I love that it started in Brooklyn. So that's my morning moment.
Well, what I've been following, and it's going to go on for days now, I'm sure, is the news regarding the looming indictment of former President Trump. Because what happened yesterday, I don't know if our listeners had heard about this, Trump basically went on to Truth Social, his digital platform, and he basically seemed to be encouraging people to protest, to show up and protest. We're having flashbacks now to the January 6th insurrection. This is if he has to then travel to New York to be arrested. If you're wondering, what's he being arrested for? You're not sure, because there's been so many things that have floated around. Well, this involves whether he concealed a $130,000 hush money payment that his attorney paid to adult film star Stormy Daniels. Prosecutors, of course, need to prove that Trump had reimbursed his attorney, Michael Cohen, and then falsified business records. But what Trump apparently did, and the DA swiftly responded, but what Trump did on the social media platform was post in all caps, you know Trump, protest, take our nation back, they're killing our nation as we sit back and watch, we must save America, protest, protest, protest. You tell me, Carlos, if this is giving you flashbacks to January 6th.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much here that is not just something that allows us to remember, but actually take action. And I hope we do. You know, Jeff, I'm feeling a lot better this morning. I'm really excited about today's conversation with our guest. And with everything that's happening in the news, I keep thinking about our democracy and what we can be doing every day to make that better. And that this kind of energy that this man has created is very real, and it really requires all of our attention. And so anything that we can do to make that better is on my plate for work. But like I said, I am feeling better, and today I feel like an actual human waking up. No more hardcore medicines, cold medicines. And I've also been kind of thinking a lot about my mom, who I'm definitely dedicating a lot of my time this year to her and making sure that she feels better. Her health is good. COVID really created a lot of distance between her and her doctors. And so my work this year is to get her back into those spaces so that she can feel better, so she can see the specialist that she needs to. So health for me is front and center this morning. I'm not ready to run another half marathon in any way, but I'm here. And we are excited. It's Women's History Month, and we'll be discussing gender equity in elective office. And in a short while, we'll bring on a leader in an effort to, To discuss what's happening in the city council. There is a majority women city council now in this incredible city, and we'll talk about the obstacles and opportunities that lie ahead.
I mean, this is a very good, timely topic. I know we've reached that unprecedented point in our council, which we're going to talk about, but I was really curious how New York City, or at least New York State, has stood up against other jurisdictions. I mean, consider that we've never had a woman mayor here in New York City, even though we've had some incredibly qualified women candidates run for office, including in the last mayoral election. According to the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University, in 2022, women represented only 31.5% of those serving as mayors across our country, with men as the other 68%. But when it came to women as a percentage of municipal office holders by state, and again, these are 2022 figures, New York ranked 24th, so in the middle, when it came to representation among municipal or city ranks, with 31.4% of office holders there being women and 67.6% of men holding those offices. Now, that was a slight improvement from the year before, and if you're wondering what the top jurisdiction was, well, that was Hawaii, which had actually a 50-50 split, Carlos. And Texas, Carlos, was, sorry to tell you, was in worse shape. It ranked 34th with only just under 29% of elected municipal positions being held by women. Here in the city, we have witnessed significant progress in the last few years when 31 women were elected to the 51-member city council, 61% of the city's governing body. And with that higher percentage of women and male allies on the council, it has clearly been a path towards moving legislation forward that can create a more equitable city. Earlier this week, this past week, I attended a rally for Equal Pay Day. That, by the way, is a reminder that it takes women 15 months to earn the same amount as men earned in 12 months. So essentially, the average full-time working woman has to work about 2.5 months more than the average man just to bring in what he earned last year. And I got caught up in the enthusiasm as members of the City Council's Women's Caucus spoke, and that was led by City Council Speaker Adrienne Adams. I'd like to share with you just a bit of what she had to say. Sean, can you play that clip?
Of our families, we have prioritized in this phenomenal Women's City Council, majority of the men who get it, we have prioritized the issues of women and working families for this session. The first time this has ever been done in the history of the city of New York. Watch us work. Because this is what it looks like when women lead. We mean this thing. We are the cornerstone, and that's why when women are healthy and have equal access to opportunity, our children, our families, and our communities thrive. That's why this council has centered women of color in our policies and have made strides to address pay inequities in our city.
And that was our speaker, Adrienne Adams. What a powerful, powerful voice. And she leads the new majority women city council here in the city and is... And, well, for me, as a council member, former council member, I'm feeling a little FOMO. This council has been working really hard, each of them fighting the best ways they know how for their communities and their districts. And, you know, the question that's going to be driving this discussion is, does it matter what their gender expression is as a member of the city council? And that brings us to our first guest, Teresa Gonzalez, vice chair of the New Majority NYC, which builds political power for all women. They achieve this by electing candidates running for office in New York City who identify as women and aligning with their values and bottom line issues. Teresa co-founded Daily Gonzalez, a minority and women-owned boutique government and community relations company. She's also currently a partner, the first Latina partner, I may add, at Bolton St. John's, a government relations consulting firm. In addition to her work at 21 and 21, Teresa is also on the boards of the New York Immigration Coalition and New York Women's Foundation. She joins us this morning as someone who's been fighting the issues, not just in government, in nonprofit space, in political spaces. She's incredible. And I want to welcome Teresa to WBAI's City Watch. Buenos dias, Teresa.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me on.
Teresa, I'm so excited to be talking to you about this. We are in an election season, but you and an incredible team are at the forefront of what is now a movement in action. And so can I ask, how did New Yorkers elect a majority women council in the last round? And how did this movement get started?
Thanks for the question. You know, it's really exciting. It was really exciting to hear that clip with Speaker Adams, because it reminds me of the importance of what we do, you know, of the importance of what we do. You know, last time, and let me start with the origin story of the New Majority NYC, which is formerly known as 21 and 21. So I need to give all the credit here to some incredible women in the council who were your colleagues, former Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito, and former council members Elizabeth Crowley and Margaret Chin. All were staring down at this at 11 women in the council in 21 and 20 and in 2017, and realized that in 2021 there would be 5 women council members in a 51 member body, which is incredible when you think about it. So they decided to take some action and founded 21 and 21, really to maintain or to build a majority woman council, and you know, ask the question that we currently face, which is how do we maintain a majority female city council? How do we elect more women to city council? And what's extraordinary about their efforts there is, you know, the goal was 21 and 21, and we surpassed it. We elected 31 women to the city council, and are really excited about this new cycle and about maintaining that majority.
Well, you know, so much of what I remember is that these things were discussed, and I'm talking about the how, the who, the what, and it really, really took shape with the leadership of Councilmembers Chin and Crowley and Melissa Mark-Viverito. There must have been so many challenges to get this up and going. What did you see as some of the biggest challenges and really the biggest need? What were the things on the other end of electing a city council that represented women?
So, I mean, I think that there was some basic need, right? There were 35 open, it was open seat season, as I like to call it, right?
Mm-hmm,
it was, there were
mm-hmm.
35 open seats. So there were a lot of opportunity, but that also meant there were a lot of people running. And so there was a focus by then 21 and 21 and other really incredible sister organizations like Women of Color for Progress and Eleanor's Legacy and others.
Right,
to focus
right.
on how we might... we might encourage more women to run. I think you mentioned earlier that you need to ask women to run a number of times before they say yes. So that was certainly a challenge. You know, I think there were also challenges like a lot of folks who were running, a lot of these women were new to the campaign trail, though not new to politics. And so what that meant was they needed support and mentorship. They needed support in networking, connecting to more sources of support. And they needed basic on-the-ground support, campaign trail support. So we really focused on a number of things, all of those things, which are really core to what we do. Mentorship, networking, and support on the campaign trail are all important things that we continue to provide to our endorsees. I would also say that, you know, interestingly, We endorsed early, and we stand by that. We got a little bit of pushback on early endorsement, but what we found was that when we endorsed early, it allowed for our candidates to get additional endorsements. There are a number of council members who were our endorsees and are currently our endorsees now in 23 who said if it wasn't for the new majority endorsing early, they wouldn't have gotten other endorsements, or they wouldn't have felt confident to move forward to seek other endorsements. So that was something that we really focused on and stand by, which is endorsing early. And then we also, you know, a challenge was ranked choice voting was somewhat of a new concept. you know, recently introduced to the city. There were a lot of skepticism around that. And what we found is rank choice voting allows for more representation, more women stepping into the to the ring. So we really stood by that as well. And I think that really made the difference. It rank choice voting is a bottom line issue for us. And we think that it really makes it possible for there to be more diversity in the candidate pool.
Teresa, it's great to have you on with us today. And I was reading the report that had come out and you by your organization, and you had touched on ranked choice voting, for instance, and term limits. There are a number of factors that you point out in this report, and we'll let readers know more about it later on in the show. The combination of factors that really together help to yield a majority women council in the city. Another one that you point out in the report was that there was the small donor public financing option. I mean, it seems like it was like the perfect storm in a positive way that really helped to elevate the opportunities for women. Were there any other factors that you think really just coincided at that point that really drew such a significant number of women into elective office at that point?
I mean, I think that there were certainly factors that we were watching nationwide, you know, beside the fact that there was such a large, you know, so many open seats, besides the fact that there was now the introduction of ranked choice voting, public financing was key to this. I think that there were, you know, a number of factors nationally that were really encouraging women to want to step in. We were watching what was happening, certainly not a new concept, but around you know, there was a racial reckoning in the country that really hit home in New York, and you saw a lot of people stepping out to lend their voice. We saw reproductive health being challenged, and there were a lot of both men and women who wanted to kind of rally against that. So we think that, you know, in addition to kind of the perfect storm of things here in New York, there were a number of things nationally that I think were really encouraging women to really step up to the plate here. I think that they're, you know, women are natural leaders. And I think that given the opportunity to lead, they will and do very well, sometimes better than men. But, you know, this is not about being better or doing more. This is really about ensuring that the policies that we see in New York are collaborative and capture all of the challenges that New Yorkers face. And we've seen a lot of really exciting legislation come out of the city council as a result of there being more women.
Well, and I wanted to ask about that, too. It's been 1 year now that this council has been leading with a powerful speaker and an MM speaker in every way, not just in the position, but just the force of her voice and what she has been pushing with the council. What have you seen as the triumph of this new council?
There's so many. I cannot understate the power of having the first Black woman speaker lead this new majority. It's pretty exciting, and she's extraordinary. But we've also seen the passage of historic maternal health packages, or a historic maternal health package that addresses racial disparities, in a way that's not been done before. We also saw historic abortion and reproductive health care rights passed with this new majority. And I would add more recently that, you know, there's been an increase. There's been a focus on child care services in New York and increasing accessibility with, you know, universal child care. I mean, these historic, innovative packages of legislation would not have not and would not have passed without there being women at the helm of this. I mean, obviously, the men in the council have supported this, but these are here because there is a majority women council and because we have a female speaker who supports all of that. But these are really exciting for New York, and I think really show the power of women leading.
You know, I have to say, as a former council member and being inside, I agree that women make better leaders. I categorically agree with that, and we can unpackage that. We'll have to do that in another show. But I agree. I feel safer in spaces with more women. Many of the men, so without having to dig into that, I really want to kind of get a little bit of sense before you go about who you are, Teresa, and the work that really drives you and inspires you. How did you get involved in this? And tell us a little bit about what drives you today as you continue your work in government and nonprofit space and political space.
Growing up as a Latina in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, which I lovingly oftentimes both adore and also lament, it was really clear that civic engagement was so key to being able to make decisions about your community and about your city that will not only affect you but affect all families in your community and, quite frankly, future generations. And so for me, although I didn't intentionally get into city government, when I did, I realized the power of participating and of sharing the knowledge of how government works with others. I'm very passionate about women of color leading in these spaces, which is why I got involved in the New Majority. Specifically Latinas and our voice being a part of the narrative, I think, is important. You know, all too often, even today, I walk into meetings where I happen to be the only woman of color and certainly the only Latina there. And it reminds me of how important it is for us to be brought in on discussions that affect our lives. And so I'd say what drives me is the need and desire and responsibility I have to represent my community in spaces where decisions are being made that will affect all of our lives. I try my best also in those ways to elevate the voices of women of color and Latinas in particular, where I can, where I know that it's important for decision makers to hear from those communities. So I'd say what drives me really is my responsibility to my community. I think it's important for everybody to feel responsibility to representing their communities. But as a Latina from Williamsburg, the voices of my mother, my aunt, my grandmother, and all of the women and people in my community who continue to push forward and try to create better lives for themselves, they're constantly ringing in my ear.
Amen to that.
So, Teresa, I know we're going to have to go in just a few moments, but I want to look ahead because, as our listeners hopefully know, because we've talked about this before, we have primary coming up. This is another election year. All the council members are up for their seats. What can we expect to see and hear from the new majority in New York City in the coming months?
I think that, what's been really exciting to watch since a lot of our endorsees got elected is how much fiercer and how much more aggressive they've moved in the spaces where they're demanding, accountability, and they're demanding policy that reflects all of their communities. So I think that's going to continue. I mean, again, we just saw historic child care services in New York City increase, and I think that's just going to get better. We still have issues around reproductive health that we need to move forward. I've been really excited to see how a lot of our endorsees have moved forward on the migrant crisis in New York. We have thousands of new New Yorkers who need a home and who need support services, and they've made no apologies about standing up for the rights of these fellow New Yorkers. So I think that you're going to see a lot more, a lot braver, a lot fiercer legislation come out of our council, particularly from the women, as we still contend with a lot of systemic racism and sexism and all of the things that go along with being in this country. So I'm really excited to see that. We also have a second round of endorsements coming up that we're going to be releasing in May. So you'll see more endorsees move forward. Because of redistricting and other things, we've seen even more women jump in. So I'm excited about that.
Well, and I just saw that you there's some districts, new districts with redistricting, and you're endorsing two candidates in some of them, two different women candidates. And so before you go, tell us a little bit about the redistricting piece, but also how people can get involved.
Yeah, I mean, look, we saw, you know, redistricting impact, how redistricting can impact any, the impact it has on candidates in any race. You know, redistricting is complicated and there are certainly its challenges, but we understand that it also prompts a new, it will prompt a new wave of women to step forward and run for office, which is why we have a second round of endorsement. But we expect, you know, that we're going to see more women. Council District 43 in Brooklyn is a good example of how we've been able to support additional AAPI representation, for example.
Yes.
So we feel good about our decision to endorse early and provide the resources for women candidates who want to run for city council, and we want to step up to that challenge as well. And then I'd say that, you know, how people can get involved is, you know, there's boots on the ground that are needed. So I would say, you know, petitioning is happening right now, volunteering with your local council member, and checking out our website, newmajoritynyc.org, has a lot of this information. But volunteering is important, helping to gain signatures on a petition. There's going to be door knocking. There's going to be phone banking. You know, this we're going to be in this season for a bit here. Primaries are coming up in June. So we encourage everybody to visit our website, to volunteer, to join as members. By the way, our membership votes for our endorsement slate. So you get a real front seat on how this works and being part of this impactful journey that we're on.
Well, Teresa, muchas gracias for your conversation and your commitment to this incredible city and to this movement that I know is shaking the halls and some of the boots of our leaders in the city. So thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Oh, and I want to make sure our listeners have the website for the New Majority, just in case they'd like to check this out. It's the newmajoritynyc.org, the newmajoritynyc.org.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. And so I want to go back to how people can get involved. And it's just so important that people in this city can get involved in their local district office, their local city council office. And I know there's different ways of engaging community, and every council member will have their different ways, but they all have a way for you to get involved. And I know when I was a city council member, and this is very much alive in many districts in the city, you can get involved in participatory budgeting. A great way, excuse me, for the local neighborhood to talk about their needs in public spaces like their parks and their schools. And so the closer you can get to the work in the city council, on the government side, the better. The political space also offers you the opportunity to be part of a campaign, but also get to know your neighbors. Get to know people who also share your values and the things that matter to the neighborhood. So I really encourage you to be a part of this. And since we are talking about Women's History Month, really in the vein of the political, we also want to take some moments to remind you that the WBAI commitment to advancing women's voices is real, and highlighting issues not just this month, but all year round. And on many shows that you listen to here on WBAI, you've been listening for decades. And so WBAI has also been committed to showcasing diverse voices, and in a large measure, that's due to you, our listeners. It's your support over the long years that have kept this station on air and has allowed us to bring voices like Amy Goodman and Margaret Kimberly and Johanna Fernandez and shows like Voices of Resistance. So if you care about New York and if this means something to you, connect. And really to make a better place for people, regardless of their gender identity, race, or ethnicity, please take a moment today to go to WBAI.org and lend your support. Remember that we are non-commercial listeners. We're non-commercial, listener-supported WBAI, and we need your help. This station does not exist without you. That's plain and simple. WBAI will go silent and go off the air forever without the support of everyone who listens. So go to givetowbai.org today and stand up for speech radio.
And by the way, this month, Women's History Month, WBAI has launched a special campaign so that we can pay our bills and stay on the air. And our commitment here at City Watch is to raise at least $200 this hour. That's it. Which you can do to help. It's very easy. You go online, you make a phone call, and let us know you want to become a BAI buddy this Women's History Month. And a BAI buddy is someone who gives an ongoing contribution, goes right onto your credit card each month of $15, $20, or more if you can afford it. And then you receive, this month, a special Women's History compilation of prominent women in history that we're going to mail to you on a flash drive. And like, let's add it to your digital music folder and listen to hours and hours of amazing trailblazing women. This thorough compilation is culled from over six seasons of Pacifica Radio's Archives weekly radio program From the Vault and Beyond. So give us a call at 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org and make a pledge and become a BAI buddy. If you just tuned in, you're listening to City Watch here on WBAI 99.5 FM New York and also streaming live at wbai.org. I'm your co-host this morning, Jeff Simmons, joined by my co-host, Carlos Menchaca. And in a little while, we're going to open up the phone lines to hear what is on your mind. But before we do that, in talking about this Women's History compilation, this wonderful audio, diverse audio flash drive that you're going to get, one of the voices on there is Ella Baker. She was a major force in shaping the development of the civil rights movement in our country. And I'd like to share with you an audio clip that provides a sample of what you're going to hear from Ella Baker. Sean, can you play that clip?
We who believe in freedom.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI New York with a moment in women's history.
The real issue is repression against anyone who is exercising what we say are our constitutional rights of freedom of speech.
Ella Baker, co-founder of the Christian Leadership Conference to Fight Racism and the inspiring force behind SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, after the Greensboro, North Carolina lunch counter sit-ins. Along with CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, SNCC organized the 1961 Freedom Rides and in 64 Freedom Summer to register black voters in Mississippi. Baker says marches are necessary to dramatize injustice, but asks why march to Washington?
Why not march to Long Island? Why not march to Westchester? Why not march to the slums of New Jersey? Why not march to Harlem, to Bedford-Stuyvesant? Not in terms of a physical march, but in terms of recognizing that what is happening in these places in terms of poverty is a responsibility that has to be dealt with by those who are not impoverished. In other words, those of us who have money have got to speak to those who are in power.
Ella Baker says voting is the key. The Ella Baker Center for Human Rights Today advocates for books, not bars, jobs, not jails, healthcare, not handcuffs. You can hear more Ella Baker and other trailblazers from WBAI's Women's History Collection by becoming a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member of WBAI. $15 a month makes you a sustaining member, a WBAI buddy. You'll receive our extensive Women's History Collection plus WBAI's tote bag, and we'll throw in a special gift. Please call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950 to become a WBAI buddy in the name of your favorite WBAI program or in the name of all WBAI shows. 212-209-2950. We're looking for more people to become WBAI buddies, 212-209-2950, or please go to this website, women.wbai.org, women.wbai.org, to become a WBAI buddy on this Women's History Day.
We believe in freedom and wisdom. I'm a woman who speaks in a voice, and I must be heard. At times I can be quite difficult.
Was Linda Perry's segment on Ella Baker, and you can hear more from Ella Baker and other trailblazing women as part of the Women's History Audio Collection, which features 79 hours of recording dating back to the earliest days of community radio broadcasting in 1949. You know, Jeff, I have been loving listening to these clips and have just been moved by these small little bits of work that this station has been doing for such a long time. And I'm really excited to dive deeper into some of these clips. But if you've just tuned in, this is Women's History Month, and you've been listening to City Watch on WBAI, New York 99.5 FM, and streaming live at WBAI.org on this Sunday, March 19th. I'm your host, Carlos Menchaca, joined by Jeff Simmons, and we're now going to open up the phone lines to you, New Yorkers, this morning to hear what's on your mind. Let us know your thoughts on what you've heard this hour with Teresa Gonzalez, or let us know what's on your mind regardless. Give us a call, 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. And maybe we'll throw some questions out to you. Can women win with conventional political credentials? You know, is that something that you're all thinking about? Is emphasizing being a woman a successful campaign strategy? Maybe there's some strategists out there that want to talk about that. How have you engaged your local city council member and doing the good work on the ground? If you're listening, and maybe you're a candidate for office, what are your thoughts on this topic? You know, there's so much here that we can dive into this morning, and I hope that you can call in, and we are ready to talk about it. We want to hear from you. Let's do this.
Number to call, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. And as we wait for the calls to come in, we're going to take a short break for just a few moments. And since Teresa Gonzalez used the word fierce several times, it made me think of Sasha Fierce. So, Sean, why don't you play this next clip by Sasha Fierce?
Check, come at the neck, disrespect.
And if you just tuned in, that was Beyonce's Run the World, Sasha Fierce. Well, we've got a lot of calls coming in, given the topic that I'm giving Carlos credit for this today. Carlos is like, we have to do this episode. So let's get to that first call. Welcome to WBAI. You are on the air. What's your name and what is on your mind this morning?
Judith from the Upper West Side. They all voted in favor of dropping the Medicare Advantage thing. So how come it's still coming through? I don't understand. So I'll get off the phone and maybe you could pick at it and explain it, or maybe another caller will come in with it. Most of us city employees are retirees are absolutely upset. And the city council went along with us.
And it's interesting, Judith, because I work with a union that they abstained. If I had heard from them correctly on this, they abstained for voting on this. I know this is still a very controversial issue on this regarding what the mayor wants to do and what the council has done. And I think it's going to continue. I think that some of the unions are still going to be fighting to see what they can do to preserve the benefits for the retirees. Thank you, Judith, for your call this morning. Let us get to the next call. Welcome to WBAI. You are on the air. What is your name and what is on your mind this morning?
Yes, hi. Good morning to the beloved community, such as we are. This is Mayat from the Grotto. Part of the problem, and never addressed, is that in the larger picture, we don't really value women and black women in particular. A situation that has spilled over into Facebook now is some truth that can't be seen, because you point to a woman and the default mode is, well, you can always call her crazy or lying or stupid. One suggestion that I want to put out to people who have access to the current managers slash leadership in single quotes, as it were, where are the women inventors, the black women inventors? That would be an excellent idea during Women's History Month to put them in the mix, and that's my comment. When you're enslaving women around their bodies, you know that you're doing something wrong. You're not going in the right direction. Thank you for bringing in the community this morning. Peace and love.
Peace and love. Thank you so much for that comment. You know, it makes me think a lot about the work in education space, and the inventors of tomorrow are being taught right now in our public schools in New York City. And so many of the conversations, if not 100% of them, were by mothers in Sunset Park in District 38. They really drove the political and the government work in my office and really focused on the schools, bringing in conversations around technology, and not just technology, but internet advancements. And so much of that infrastructure is in place. It's coming in place. There's it's 8 new schools getting built in the district, in District 38. And so much of that, I think, is in the hands of the mothers in districts like mine in Brooklyn, to ensure that we have inspiring and technologically advanced spaces to inspire, to inspire our young people. And that includes men and women. And so thank you to that caller.
And we've got a few other callers on the line. Let's get the next one on. Welcome to WBAI City Watch this morning. What is your name and what's on your mind this morning?
Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York, and thank you so much for being there, Jeff Simmons and Carlos Manchaca.
Good morning, Daryl. What's on your mind?
Okay, we have three things that are that I'm really, really interested in. I see seniors who use accessorized, and I'm trying to understand why Lyft and Uber and the local private car services are able to operate on a call-in service basis, whereas accessorized, there are layers of layers, and it has to be called in a day ahead of time. Oh, yes, you can use your private service if you're willing to wait 3 months to be recompensated. So what I would like all elected officials to do is to access all the services that are provided by the governmental structures and have them access them and attempt to use them the way a person who uses those services has to use them, and then explain how comfortable and easy those things are to use. I think that's one thing that's really, really important, that all people who pass the bills and effectuate the benefit to the people who they are giving benefits to, use the services and see how easy they are to use. See how easy it is to contact Human Resources Administration. And before I get on too long, 100 billionaires live in New York City. The past mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, can you tell me what his net worth is?
It's in the billions. Is it
94 billion.
Yeah.
He's moved from, since the pandemic, he's moved from number 17 on the Forbes real-time billionaires list to number 7. He's consistent. So the reason I'm bringing that up is that if you have 100 billionaires living in the city, why is the mayor cutting the school budget? Why is there any problem in this city at all with housing? I mean, I would think that people who earn, who have accumulated that kind of wealth, once again, you're talking about 100 people, they could kick a crumb off the table and end the housinglessness problem in New York City in a blink, as a club, as a project. So I'm attempting to understand why it's more important to starve and undereducate a population than it is to educate a population.
Well, Daryl, thank you so much for thanks so much for giving us a call.
Daryl, you need to ask for $3.50 an hour. I apologize, because you need $2.6 billion to keep the station. Because if you lose Pacifica, we lose BAI. And in that context, I want to compliment you all, because this discussion goes on zero other places in the form that you allow it to go on.
Daryl, I want to step in and just say thank you so much for these comments. They connect in so many different ways, and what you're speaking to is the disconnect that government often has in its services, but also in the people themselves. And I think what you're pointing to is something that we need to solve. And the the suggestion that the government leaders who are changing and constantly changing city services actually use those city services, and that's assessor right is one of those. I think that has been such a big topic, and there are so many issues tied to the resistance to that kind of change, and some of them are actually good reasons, but the service is just very, very terrible, beyond terrible, and it's unusable in so many conversations that I've had with seniors and others who use it for doctor's appointments. And then shifting over to the idea that a billionaire can be a mayor, really that's something that I think is a conversation in a political space that allows New Yorkers to say, hey, you're going to be our leader, and this is the kind of leader that we need. What also I have to say is our new mayor in New York City, Eric Adams, is not a billionaire. He's come from a kind of different line, but has the same questions in front of him. How is he cutting the essential services to our communities, like education and other spaces that everyday New Yorkers need? And so I hope that you continue to go out and speak these truths and vote and get your neighbors to vote and get your neighbors connected. And the question I have for you, if you're still on the line, is are you connected to your local city council member? Who is that? And what is that relationship for you in terms of these issues and how you bring your truth into power, into spaces of power?
I would like to see me be more active in that political space. I do reach out to my local council person. I attempted to reach out. The state senators had a forum, and I attempted to bring up these same issues in that forum. Seven Manhattan, all the state senators in Manhattan had a forum last Thursday. Yes, you're absolutely correct. If you're failing to walk the walk, then you really don't really have little to say. However, once again, I'm confused. Just trying to understand how 100 billionaires can live in a place in which they allow the underfeeding and the undereducating of children simply because of capital.
I agree. I think this is also an opportunity to talk about some of the movements both in the city council and in the state legislative space to tax the rich. And this is also a federal conversation that can really solve a lot of our issues if we just, with a fraction of their wealth, can bring that back into municipalities to fund these very essential services. Life would be much better. So thank you so much. Sure.
I have just one more thing.
The city, go for it.
New York City, the mayor, the president of the city council, and the public advocate are all of African descent. In the legislature, you have the majority leader in the Senate and the speaker of the assembly, both of African descent. You have also a veto-proof majority in both of the state legislative houses. So, once again, what does the population need to do in order to get New York State Health Act passed? I mean, this is like simple stuff. I'm just confused. They said when we get power, we will be able to see the progress. And yet, once again, mayor of New York cut the school budget, increased the police department.
And with that, we're going to leave your final words in our minds and our hearts to keep up the good fight. Thank you, Daryl. And we welcome not just your ideas, but your heart in this fight for not just justice, but real sense of equity, whether we're talking about women in the city council or our leaders reflecting who we are. It's our government that needs to start reflecting our values as well. So I'm really excited for you and the callers this morning. This is the first time that I've taken callers and listener voices, and so I hope to be doing this more with Jeff in our future listening. And Jeff, where are we now?
Okay, well, we're gonna have to wrap the show in 1 minute. Want to just jump in very quickly? Thank you, our listeners, Judith, Maya, Daryl, for calling in this morning. Also, want to thank our guest, Teresa Gonzalez of the New Majority NYC. Of course, never forget to thank our wonderful engineer, Sean Rhodes. And again,
thank you, Sean.
Of course, our listeners, please make a point of donating in the name of this show, City Watch. Give us a call at 212-209-2950 or go to givetowbai.org. In the name of this show, become a BAI buddy this Women's History Month.
And we'll be back next week at this time with another episode of City Watch. And instead of our usual closing music, this Women's History Month, we thought about ending it with another empowering song by Rachel Platten. Muchas gracias and have a wonderful day.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a explosion.
morning. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. City Watch with Jeff Simmons and Carlos Menchaca came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up at 9 o'clock is Sunday Laughing with the Laughing Cavalier. So please, stay tuned.
Hi, this is Julian Gioiello, and I'm a listener and supporter of WBAI. I'm a student at NYU, and I live in New York City. And I want to shout out to the other young listeners of WBAI. We have to help keep the station going, and the easiest way to do it is through the WBAI Buddy System. If you donate as little as $10 a month, you have proactively promoted free speech radio. Go to the website WBAI.org, click the donate button, and make a difference.
Don't want to use the website or the call center to contribute to WBAI? That's okay. Please feel free to send your check or money order to WBAI, 3rd floor, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Please make your check or money order out to Pacifica-WBAI. We thank you for your donation and hope that you will spread the word and tell your friends. And please keep on listening.
Effective directing of resources for good influence will be Sunday, March 26th at 4 p.m. A candidate is running for office. Do you donate to their campaign? Maybe. If it qualifies them to get into debates where they are going to force discussion of certain issues. In a flood of emails, you are asked to donate again to a political party. Do you do it? And have your money be the tail on a dog funded by lots of mega corporations? Where do you put your money to influence the world for the better? What about sending some of your money and resources to WBAI and Pacifica for the influence it can have on the world? Next question. When resources come into WBAI and Pacifica, how can they best be directed within the Pacifica environment? To improve programming, attracting audiences, or to promote good shows already here? This is what's up for discussion. Give us your thoughts. Zoom in by computer or by Zoom. Go to WBAI's Town Hall webpage for the Zoom link information and phone number sign-in information.
Extinction Diaries. There may have once been over 50,000 right whales in the Atlantic, up to 60 feet long, and named right whale because they were the easy right whale to hunt. Their numbers fell to just 100 individuals before being one of the first whale species protected in 1937. After only reaching just 500, a decline began and by 2017 was accelerating when 18 individuals died. There were no births in 2018, and in 2019, a string of deaths made headlines as rights died entangled in fishing gear and boat strikes in the St. Lawrence region. Their numbers are now under 400 again. With the sixth great extinction spotlight on them, the right whale is like a canary in the coal mine, whose near-term future is an indication of just how successful humanity will be with our own survival.